Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are here for another episode of Hunt the Truth, episode number 2. This is our third back-to-back episode of nothing but Hunt the Truth. This is getting a little out of hand, but this is crazy.
All I have to say is, oh my God.
I am honestly very, very impressed on how, like, even how with how much information that we've gotten already, just with everything in episode 1 and the pilot episode and the little teaser. There's a lot of information packed in every single one of these episodes, and it's just, my mind is just completely blown away by everything that we're getting through the series yet again, and it's awesome.
Yeah,
so cool.
I find myself listening to it multiple times, and I think I'm only getting about 3/4 of the stuff that's in there.
I know, you have to listen to it over and over again just to make sure that you get everything.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sucks, but, you know, it's definitely one of those things where we don't mind doing it, so we'll continue to listen to it over and over and over
and over
and over,
yes,
and over as we desperately try to figure out what's going on. But as you guys may have noticed, we do not have Toa Freak on with us tonight. Unfortunately, he has some internet issues that he's currently trying to get addressed, so we will not have him on for this week, but hopefully we will have him on for next week, and he'll be able to join us for episode 3 of Hunt the Truth, season 2. We hope that wherever you are, Toa, that you are shining brightly. So let's go ahead and get to a couple of things that has happened over on the Hunt the Truth website. So as you guys know, there's been more videos that have come out, more cameras from Meridian of the event that's taken place there. So we just posted an article on our website trying to do a little collection of all the videos. Not that the collection over on the Tumblr site isn't good enough, but we figured, hey, might as well just kind of showcase all the ones that actually get put out there that aren't necessarily on the Tumblr site, because some of the videos actually get put out on community sites first. So we kind of want to highlight those community sites that are actually making an active participation in the videos and in the Hunt the Truth stuff for season 2. So if you go to our website and look up the post that we made, you'll actually see all the original video embeds, whether they were on Twitter or Tumblr or YouTube or wherever. There's been a few different communities that have gotten involved. So Ready Up Live's been involved. Chief Canuck has been involved. We've had one. Team Beyond has one. Halo Followers had one. And then a few more specific to just Hunt the Truth site. So make sure you check those out. And we also had a little video that got released this weekend. If everyone saw the little TV teaser that got put out. And this was an announcement that the Master Chief had been declared KIA on October 27th, 2560, which Halo 5 takes place in 2558. So this is basically 2 years down the road of when Chief is supposedly going to die after the events of Halo 5, which had a lot of people discussing what exactly is supposed to be going on in the Halo universe. I know the Master Chief is a very iconic figure. A lot of people don't want to see him go at all. And it's one of those things that it's hard to tell whether or not it's just a hype machine type of thing, or if it's something that's actually going to happen within the universe. My bet is that it's a hype machine type of thing.
Yeah, me too.
Definitely don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he has died.
They haven't come out and said one way or the other, but they've implied that Master Chief's going to be hanging around for a while. So it leads me to believe that either they've made a radical change to the story arc, or it's just propaganda.
Yeah. And as far as the propaganda side of things, we had another post on the Hunt the Truth Tumblr blog, and this is actually a message sent from Sully to Admiral Osman saying that there was actually an error in the announcement. He was supposed to be declared KIA on October 27th, 2558, and that Lieutenant Boren, who was the person that delivered the message in the video, was overcome with emotions and just being affected by the announcement that she set the wrong year. And the script was supposedly approved by Oni and by the higher ups. And it's just they, whenever it was delivered, it was delivered inaccurately. So that kind of leaves a lot open to whether or not this is actually something that's true, or if this is Oni covering something up like they've done so many times in the past.
You know, the funny thing is I read this letter earlier today, and I could swear there was one more line right there about the date.
What do you mean?
I could have been just seeing things. For some reason, they actually had the statement that it was supposed to be 2558 instead of 2058.
No. That was me mistyping the tweet I put out earlier today.
Was that with you?
That was me.
Okay.
That was me being dumb. My fingers not working today.
That was Duststorm's fault.
I think I had about 3 tweets today where there were definite spelling errors or typos, and I got caught out for quite a few of them. So, yeah, that was me.
Gee, the grammar Nazi got called out on it.
I know.
How that goes. Anyway, but this, it took, when I read it, it took me a minute to realize that, well, no, wait a minute. In the video, she said 2560. And when she said that, it got me questioning when Halo 5 actually takes place, you know, as far as the actual, you know, month and year. Because, you know, everything that had led up to this, it's, you know, in 2558. So it kind of confused me for a little bit. And then I'm like, and then I saw this letter and like, okay, that's one way to explain it.
Right.
I like the part where the lieutenant was reassigned.
Yeah. Reassigned to where there's going to be no public facing things whatsoever. That's what happens when you mess up in the government, you just get reassigned.
And there's a, I don't know if they intended to do this, but there's this nice little multiplayer call out there. The remote facilities identification is BXR730.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
So I don't know if that is intentional or just happened to happen, but you never know.
It's a nice little throw in there. I think it's pretty cool. Yeah.
But anyway.
But she got immediately reassigned to Industries Disclosure Management Department. Not public facing whatsoever. And all of her work will be reviewed on a weekly basis. So, sucks for her.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right. So that is going to be it for the little wrap-up for the Hunt the Truth blog. On to the episode, which is jam-packed with new stuff. As we picked up off from the last episode, Maya has gotten a mission to Meridian to check out one of the event sites. This is at Conrad's Point. So it's going to be something that is a little different about this one is there's no UNSC control over it right now. All the other sites that has experienced a similar event has kind of been hush-hushed by the UNSC. And this one's actually been taken over by NCA military control. So they're actually trying to go in and try to get this one under control. Starting off with the episode, we hear that Maya's just still taking a lot of it in. The whole realization of this is actually happening. The planet's gone dark because of it. And from the first season, we know that Mashaak was talking about a lot of the stuff that was going on in the other colonies. And thinking through some stuff, she feels like she should be really worried about what's going on and should like be really afraid of the situation. But she has kind of this feeling of similarity or familiarity with this, primarily because Mashaak was talking about strange things happening in the outer colonies before he had the chance to expose Maya's true identity to Ben. And then just weeks after Mashaak was talking about those events, when she got Ari's data about the events that were happening on Meridian, that was too much of a coincidence for her to ignore. And this was something that just kind of didn't like sit very well with her, kind of bothered her a little bit, not to the point where she was focused on the mission like she should be, and then BB, of course, had to kind of pull her out of her daydreaming state and back into reality. It's like, we're going into a zone that is dark, that's heavily controlled by NCA militant rebels. You need to be on your game here, because the situation we're going into is not a good one.
Hey, wake up!
Yeah. Definitely need to snap out and focus on the mission. Although, as you can probably tell already from just the pilot episode and the first episode, she's not exactly the Oni operative as she once was.
She's definitely not as devoted to it as she used to be. There's other things clouding her judgment.
Right. There's lots of different feelings, and I guess a good term would be different point of view on things ever since she has become Pharaoh. And even though she's still holding out on doing what Oni has asked her to do, what her job is, there's been a lot more gray area developed in what she's perceiving as who she should care about, what she should care about, how she should go about doing the things she is supposed to be doing, and all that stuff. And it's really impacting her ability to operate as an Oni agent. And we've already seen that with her interactions with Ben, where she should have been strictly professional, shouldn't even gone down to see him, but she wanted to give him some kind of solidarity of reaming her for betraying him. And when he didn't even know, she eventually spilled the beans of what her true identity was, instead of not talking to a federal prisoner about classified information. Kind of slipped up on that one.
The things they've had her do so far in playing this role of Pharaoh, they could mess with people, regardless of who you are. They have an extreme possibility of messing with people, especially being ordered to kill fellow agents.
Because she mentioned before that it was something that she wouldn't even question about doing, and now she looked up the two agents that she killed because she cared about what happened to them, cared about the families that she impacted because of them not being there anymore. Something that an Oni operative is pretty much needs for any kind of long-term engagement is being able to have that cold personality, that disconnect from the people that you're working with. And over the maybe at the beginning of this whole thing, she was completely disconnected from everybody. But as time went on, just from her own testimony, she grew attached to certain people. Certain people became her best friends within the people that she worked with in the other colonies. And that kind of rubbed off on her, I think. I think the rigidness of an Oni agent just kind of got sanded off a little bit from being out there for 5 years. But going down to the Meridian, the only link that Maya had was Captain Arnie Resnick. This is the other Oni agent who was tasked to figure out what was going on in the outer colonies once these events started to crop up. He went dark a few weeks ago after the last few transmissions of the weird events that were happening out there. So that was the only person that she knew to contact, given specific coordinates to try to land. But whenever she approached, there was an analog transmission that they picked up, which is kind of odd given that all the reports of an event that's happened completely fries any tech on the planet where the event happens. So the fact that this analog transmission was even there was kind of an indication to Maya that Ari was still alive even after he went dark.
And very resourceful.
Yeah. She said that Arnie was a tech whiz, just can come up with the weirdest things and just make them work. He was very resourceful, a mediator, a tinkerer at best. So the fact that he was able to conjure up some kind of device to transmit an audio transmission when a whole bunch of tech just got fried is pretty impressive. So even before kind of hearing the message that was on the transmission, she already kind of knew that it was him. And the message that was in the transmission was extreme caution, ping on final approach, friendly pings receive new coordinates. At that point, she was sure that it was Ari.
Mm-hmm. You know, the funny thing is they say an analog signal. And the right. first thing that pops into my head is he scrounged up an old tube radio from somewhere.
Yeah, probably. And it's got to be powerful.
What is an analog signal?
It's just like your normal radio chatter today. I mean, FM radio, that's analog radio. You have anyone that's a ham radio user, that's all analog.
Yeah, but if this event had knocked out all this electronic equipment, any AM, FM radio that's produced today would get knocked out too. Because yes, it does receive an analog signal, and they do broadcast an analog signal, but it's all digital components inside.
Well, today, maybe, sure.
Okay, we're talking about 2558.
Hey, some people get into some really antique stuff even today, so it would not surprise me if there was someone that was just into anything tech and antiques were just a niche.
But beside the point, that's the first thing that popped into my head. He scrounged up an old tube, and I do mean tube as in glass tube.
Yeah.
Radio transmitter.
Probably. They didn't go into the specifics in the podcast, but if this person is as resourceful as Maya is trying to make us believe, then yeah, he knows his stuff. He could engineer probably anything, so to speak.
Yeah, it was just something that kind of sparked my interest. Okay, just, what exactly did he come up with?
I don't know. Could be a number of different things. It's just impressive to know that someone out there that would be 500 years in the future still has enough technical expertise to just scrounge up a bunch of different components together to make a radio.
Now, think about this. In 500 years, provided we still occupy the Earth and the archives of this era do not get destroyed, what do you think they're going to think of Hunt the Truth or Halo?
I don't know.
There's a twist.
That's a deep philosophical question. What were these guys thinking? Well, it is an entertainment industry.
Yeah, in comparing it to their actual lives that they're leading, in 2558 or whatever.
Well, look at Star Wars, look at Star Trek, look at all the different stuff that was in those TV shows. And
Buck Rogers. Oh, wait a minute, that was 1985.
You could probably say the same thing with that. Any kind of sci-fi show pushes the envelope of what we perceive can be done from a technological standpoint. And just the fact of the matter is there's some of those TV shows have inspired people to research and look for different ways to do things. I mean, take the transponder from Star Trek. That's your flip phone.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking more along the lines of how simple of an idea it is that we're talking about in these sci-fi fictions.
Oh, okay.
Not the other way around.
I don't know.
Which, I mean, some of it may not happen in 500 years. We don't know. At the rate that technology advances, pretty much everything in the Halo series could be highly probable.
Could be, yeah.
Just at the rate that technology advances. You buy something that's state of the art and 3 weeks later it's obsolete.
To a degree, yeah. Take a look at Back to the Future, though. Everyone, once 2015 hit, everyone was all abuzz about, okay, where's our hoverboard?
Yeah.
And it's definitely one of those things where artistic minds are trying to figure out what the future may look like at that time. And same thing with Halo. You take that maybe 500 years out, we are a species that traverses the stars in such a way where we can visit other planets and that we have the capability to generate artificial gravity and whatnot. It's definitely not out of the realm of impossible. It just depends on how our technology advances through the course of human history.
It's an interesting point of view. I wish I'd be around to find out.
Right.
Not that I really want to live for another 400 years or 450 years.
Just need a composer. That's all.
Yeah, there we go.
And then you can
become a Promethean knight.
Then you can live on the internet.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to live on the internet.
No?
No, especially if you got BioNet.
Well, okay. You may have a valid point there. That cannot help with.
You know, after she receives this transponder signal, which truly amazing, I like how they describe how she lands.
So it was basically a way, I guess, to throw off anyone who may be monitoring her approach. But she calls it a dead dive. Basically, an uncontrolled drop, or I guess a controlled drop. Like, no thrust to kind of buffer her approach, but just letting gravity take her in so she's weightless in this freighter that she's in. And at some point, really low, like probably underneath where you would normally deploy atmospheric breakers, or like if you remember the ODST drop pods, there's a little like plus sign looking thing. So that's an atmospheric breaker. So deployed those. And then once she was close enough to the ground, she landed the freighter. And it's definitely wanted trying to be stealth in this landing, because she finds a crater that is well hidden so that she could get out if she needed to.
Mm-hmm.
After trying to find a place to land, or I guess it wasn't too hard to find a place to land, but when she landed, got out of the freighter, and BB has some pretty interesting comments to say about the planet, as typical BB, saying that who would want to
really... By the way, they're doing a great job with him.
Yeah, they really are. I really like his personality. I think the European accent is pretty good. I like the attitude that he has. It's very characteristic of what we've seen in the books. Not as BB doesn't seem quite as stubborn in this one as I remember reading in the books. He seemed a little more kind of like proud and stuck up, at least reading it in the books.
Yeah, but by the end he kind of mellowed out a little bit.
Yeah.
He wasn't, I mean, he was still omnipotent because it's BB.
Yeah.
But he wasn't, I'm trying to think, wasn't as brash as he was at the very beginning.
Abrasive?
Well.
Not as...
I guess maybe by the end he had a more... I was trying to think how to describe... It's like the experiences he had through those books humbled him a little bit. You know, the loss of his fragment. Yeah,
I guess that's
stuff
true.
Stuff like that. It made him evaluate his life, as short as it is, very carefully, which for, you know, AI, that was probably, you know, a millisecond.
Right.
But it gave him a different perspective. So I can see, you know, in the books, I could see the change happening as we went through the books, and where they have BB now, it, to me, it falls in line with what was happening in the books. But he's still BB.
Right.
He still has that smart aleck part to him that makes him such a fun character.
Right. And we've seen that a couple times already when he introduced himself saying, hello, BB, in the last episode. And then why he was talking about how he couldn't understand how anyone would live on this desolate rock. No wonder they're unhappy. Comment. Yeah, it goes to show that his sarcasm is still there in full effect. But he just seems like not quite as... At least, and this is just my perception of what I remember reading from the books, but he seemed to be kind of like the stuck-up type. It's like, I am omnipotent, but the way he presents himself here is a lot more personal from an interactive level, which is nice. I think that works well for Hunt the Truth and being able to like BB as a character. So it works.
Yeah, definitely.
So after the few interesting comments from BB, Maya goes on to say how Conrad is kind of the perfect hideout place for a lot of these NCA groups. There's a lot of mining facilities that get abandoned and are repurposed for training grounds that they use to kind of coordinate. And these planets are dangerous because of that. No one's at the coordinates that she was told to land at, the new coordinates that got sent out, trying to figure out what to do next. BB points out a vantage point on a rock above where they landed. And she goes up there, takes a look around the landscape, sees some industrial buildings out in the background. But after a while, she figures out that what she's looking at is a giant freaking crater,
which they have a really good picture of on the website.
Yeah, if you go over to the Hunt the Truth Tumblr page, they have a picture of just how massive this crater is. And this thing is gigantic. Like
it's as big as a Guardian.
Yeah. And I'm assuming, judging by that picture, that might be the size of maybe a downtown city, possibly. I mean, it is.
Well, didn't they say it was like a kilometer across or something like that in the episode?
They put a distance in there. I forget how big it was, but this thing is huge.
It's a really big hole.
Yeah, if anyone remembers the distance that Ari said the crater was, put it in the chat. But this is definitely one of those things that it's kind of just sticks out there. After a while, she figured out what she was looking at. And by the time she finally figured that out, Ari comes up behind her, holding a gun up to her. And he does the whole thing.
I love this conversation.
Yeah. He says, "Don't move, turn around, put your hands up, don't make any sudden movements." And of course, whenever Maya turns around, she sees him and she recognizes him, calling him by name. And Ari goes through this really elaborate explanation of what he's specifically doing, because people may be watching what's going on. So he goes through and he's like, "I have my gun up at you because I feel threatened. I'm going to take your bag from you." Yeah, because I don't know you.
Know who you are.
"I'm going to take your bag from you. I'm going to look through your bag." And at that point, she's like, you won't find anything in there. And then he's like, "Okay, I do not see anything in there. I'm giving the bag back to you." So
I am feeling better about you. I am handing your bag back. And I no longer feel threatened by you. I'm putting my gun down. It's
very interesting.
It's like having a narrator for your own conflict, you know?
I know, right? But yeah, he's trying to possibly play the situation that other NCA members have seen them together. So, of course, if anyone's that shouldn't be there shows up, he's trying to make sure that he plays the part of interrogating her and seeing what she knows and why she's there in the first place. So checking the bag, obviously, for safety reasons, and then giving it back. And then he says that he puts the gun down because he doesn't feel threatened anymore. And then kind of goes on to say that, okay, now we know each other.
Yeah, apparently they only have video surveillance if they are watching him.
Well, remember, everything is fried. So there is no video surveillance. It's just people seeing them up on this.
Well, I should say a person with binoculars or something like that.
Or, yeah. Unless they have one of those like NFL dishes that you could point at somebody and try to hear everything they're saying. But as far as he's concerned, everyone's just out. Whoever's out on patrol, he's just going to see, or they're just going to see them two together. They're not going to know exactly what they're saying, per se. So after this whole thing finally kind of gets down underneath the whole stage act and they finally get down to business, BB finally speaks up. It's like, okay, now that we're done with formalities.
Which I love.
BB just is quiet until the very end. It's like, okay, that was interesting. That was fun. Time to get down to business.
Now we're done with the pleasantries.
Right. Maya said that a lot of people thought Arya was dead and she didn't think so. Good to see him alive and well. But she explains to Ari that they were sent, her and BB, to investigate and report back anything that they found to the UNSC. Ari says that he didn't really have much info. All he knew after he arrived was that there was a major event that caused a lot of seismic damage. It fried a bunch of tech and it left this giant hole in the ground. And he actually showed up after the event. So he was nearby and didn't actually get there until after everything happened.
Well, he sent a report just before the tech fried to Oni.
Or tried to send
it is from the, well, if he tried to send it from the planet or as they were approaching the planet.
Well, I'm guessing he may
exactly sure on the timing, because that feeds into the next part, where he starts to discuss his last report to Oni.
Right. And I don't know if this is something where he was on the planet, just on the wrong side of the planet, or if he was approaching in a ship. But he was trying to send off last amounts of data that he had from his time being there. there is some stuff that he says in his report that obviously Maya did not know about. But aside from the NCA completely blocking off access to the crater, one little thing that Ari decided to discuss whenever he said what the NCA was up to was that Ilsa Zane was trying to figure out what their next move was after this whole event, which we thought she was dead.
Apparently she's not.
Nope. She lived. If anyone remembers reading Halo Initiation, you remember that she was a candidate for the Spartan program and everything went very, very wrong. And
well, she was the first candidate for the Spartan 4 program, where they were trying to build the ultimate unarmored super soldier.
Right. And turns out she survived. She got picked up and indoctrinated by Matthias Drake for the new Colonial Alliance. So she's here now. back in at it again.
And cleaning house.
Yeah, so she's running the whole place now. She's in totally in charge of the NCA faction on the planet. Ari thought that he sent this message. Well, he said he sent this message back to Oni in his last report. And he was a little surprised when she didn't know that he was alive or that she was alive, judging by the last report. So basically, Ilsa Zane's taken over and everything after she defected from Oni under Matthias Drake. She's been basically taking over certain parts of the NCA and trying to drive home the military agenda for them to attack Oni. So this is just one of those holes that she finally decided to hunker down in, being that the event was under NCA control. And we'll figure out why that's important, given some of the situations we'll hear about later in this episode. Whenever the colonies did get hit, like all five colonies, this was where Ilsa Zane basically collected everybody, told everyone to come to Conrad and regroup. So this is where everyone that's in the NCA that was on any one of these planets that were affected is basically consolidated to. Maya asked Ari why he hasn't escaped, and he said that he was trying to keep a lid on things to make sure that the thermonuclear nukes that she had in her possession were kind of kept away from her trigger finger. She had enough armaments to basically flatten an entire solar system, just completely wipe it out. So he decided to stay so that he could try to make her not just go crazy and wreak havoc, kind of bring that down a bit. He decided
to stay to try to talk the crazy Spartan down.
Right.
From using them.
And there's your first problem, is trying to talk a crazy Spartan down.
And to give you guys a little heads up on Ilsa, when she was removed from the Infinity, it wasn't through the shuttle bay. It was from a window in the bridge. In other words, she was ejected out into space.
Yep, into the vacuum of space.
And she survived. This is not a lady you want to mess on. That you want to mess with.
Well, given all the augmentations that she was given, she obviously has a longer survival rate out in space, but being picked up by the NCA, she was an easy convert.
Well, I think she was probably already rooting for the NCA before that happened.
I don't know if it was the NCA specifically. I think it was more just kind of like anti-UNSC at that point, and then
the rebel front. We can,
fair enough.
I get, yeah. Put it under that. But anyway, the fact that she was picked up by these particular rebels and brought back to their home base gave her the means to get where she is. And they go into detail describing what she has been doing since she basically took over this group.
Mm-hmm.
Any weak link or any person that she determined was a weak link was eliminated.
Well,
there was no go find another group. It was, you're done.
Yeah. And we get to that whole situation on Conrad in a little bit when we hear her later on in the episode. So definitely a radical in the sense that she has a very different leadership style I think, from a lot of different people, especially since she's kind of messed up in the head. But her being in control is obviously not a good thing, being a former test case for the Spartan program. And with that said, they're going into some very dangerous territory.
Mm-hmm.
After Ari gives his sit rep to Maya, Maya decides that, okay, this situation is too dangerous to go in alone. Going to give a sit rep back to Noah on what's happening with Thilsa Zane, what the current situation is and whatnot. And BB says, or tells them that there's a few guards approaching. And that's when Maya has to give Ari the quick brief of, okay, rebels obviously saw you get captured. How did you get out? So she told him the story that Oni was officially saying of how she got out, how they were interrogating her about the events that were happening in the colonies, and that she managed to commandeer an escape with a freighter, which is not quite a believable story. And we find that Ari doesn't particularly think it's a clever story either, but they'll have to go with it because that's what they got. So the guards come up and they're questioning what Ari was doing. And he's like, I was doing my perimeter check and hey, look what I found. Because he was not quite on, I guess, the right path that they normally take for perimeter checks. He was kind of off the beaten path a little bit and basically said that, yeah, I went off the path, but hey, the perimeter checking turned out someone. So, and when he discussed with the other guards of who she was, they escorted her to their mining facility that they're using for their kind of like training ground purposes and their barracks in a way to or as an honored guest of the NCA. So fill in the feral role right back in action, so to speak.
So to speak.
Let's see. When they got to the encampment where everyone else was just kind of hanging around, there were hundreds of rebels drinking and partying, and apparently, according to Ari, this has only happened since last night. And there was some kind of celebration going on, and there wasn't any particular reason why. There's been a lot of tension recently because of the events and because of everything that the NCA is trying to gear up for with this war against the UNSC. But everyone that was there, Maya basically identified as people that aren't sympathizers, they're bloodlust, they're mercenaries that attack innocent civilians. And there's a saying that came up a couple of times in the podcast, from fire to blood, that they kept on saying.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that they were doing, from her observation, was against what she was trying to do as Pharaoh. So where she was trying to take the more peaceful option, having everyone try to be in a position of building a strong economy, these guys were just all out for war and violence. And it was not quite a comfortable situation, especially being that a lot of the tension recently, that they're just celebrating for some unknown reason is not very, very good. It's kind of a little off. And Ari went off after they got there to try to figure out what exactly was going on, try to get a little bit of information of why they might be celebrating. But as Pharaoh was kind of walking around, she was seeing if she recognized anybody. And at first she didn't. From her being abducted, she couldn't really think of anyone that could have survived that she would know that would be there. I mean, everyone probably scattered afterwards, and the likeliness of someone ending up on Conrad or Meridian wasn't likely. But as she was thinking about some of this stuff, she heard someone's voice, Bostwick. Don't know if we ever got a first name for Bostwick, but it was someone that she knew from her group. So she was completely taken by surprise, but she was very happy to see her. And she was obviously drunk, very drunk. And Bostwick told Maya that a lot of people thought she was dead. Whenever she did get captured, they thought that Oni had got her for good, that they were I guess some people probably would have thought that they would have put her away for good, or maybe some thought that she would be dead. But it seemed like a lot of people thought once Pharaoh was gone, that was going to be it. But Bostwick being drunk says, I never believed that you would have been dead. You're too good to get captured by those Oni spies. To her surprise, there she is, having too much to drink. And Maya puts it out there that being the little 5 foot, 100 pound girl that she is, she's already drawing enough attention without her being drunk. So she was trying to play a really low profile when she was around Bostwick. Being the only person that she knew, there's this little dialogue about how Maya met Bostwick, how when she first met her, she was 17, just lost her parents to a UNSC incident where some ODST troopers were drunk and messing around with plasma grenades when they accidentally pressed the button on one of them and it killed her parents, which is pretty devastating when you think about it.
Yeah, I really have a problem with that. And the UNSC discipline policies really need to change.
So apparently all that happened was that the ODSTs got a slap on the wrist and then a formal letter was written to Bostwick for the loss of her family. And being that she was a 17-year-old filled with anger and rage, now just lost her parents, she banded up with some other homeless kids. And the way that she coped was through aggression, committing petty crime, and eventually, as she got older, it turned towards violence. Maya saw an opportunity to take her frustration, her violent side, her aggression, and after taking her under her wing, she started making it towards a more positive change. And she was actually one of the other people that was kind of on board with what Maya was trying to do for the rebels. Well, I guess this is someone that really she was close with. We mentioned in the last episode that there were quite a few, I guess in the pilot episode, there were quite a few friends that she lost in that attack. She was going over the names and her right hand person died in the attacks, who was one of her great friends. And this is just another one of those people that she really cares about. And I have a feeling this might be a trend in the episodes to come where there's people that she really cares about. And this might be a per episode thing where you see something bad happen to people that you grew close with as Pharaoh. And that's going to help tip her over the edge of basically going rogue from Oni.
Mm-hmm.
Defect. That was the word I was looking for. After all that, we can actually go back into conversation with Bostwick. And this is, at this point, we learned that there's definitely something going on other than just kind of protecting the crater. As far as what Bostwick has been charged with doing, she does perimeter checks on the north side of the crater, and she's helping a science team take care of a project. So she's walking around while they're doing some tests, taking some readings. And of course, Maya's trying to figure out what kind of readings they're taking. Like, why would they be taking readings of this crater? At this point, BB interrupts and Maya goes to respond to BB, at which case BB says, no, I'm just talking directly to you through your ear canal. And this throws Bostwick off a little bit, and she's like, wait, who? And Maya plays it off as like, oh, I thought I saw somebody. And BB in his usual self is like, smooth. way to divert that one. But it turns out that the sit rep back to Noah kind of turned some heads, and they made the decision to go ahead and launch an airstrike based on their location because they decided that this was too much of a valuable opportunity to take out Ilsa Zane that could not be passed up. So at this point, they're bait, or not necessarily bait, but
they're a target marker.
Yeah, they're what the laser pointer is pointing at, basically. So after that, she tells Bostwick that they need to get out of there, kind of interrupting her about what they were talking about. Just at that point, Ari comes back, says that he found a little bit of information, gives Maya a data chip. And at this point, she doesn't have any time to really ask him what's on the data chip, what she's supposed to do with it. But he was off, obviously, a little like there was definitely something off about when he came back to her and giving her the data chip. But it's something that she couldn't really think about at the time because there's an airstrike on the way. So she told Ari that they needed to get out of there. And Ari interpreted the seriousness of what she said and started to make their way out. But as they were trying to make their way out, the rest of the rebels that were in there shut all the doors and windows. So they were all trapped in there. Everyone got super quiet. And then all of a sudden, Ilsa Zane comes out into the room.
And everybody goes quiet.
The whole room goes silent.
Thousands of them go quiet. And all she did was walk in the room. She hasn't said shit yet.
Was it really thousands? I didn't think it was quite that much.
Hundreds, thousands, whatever. They never did actually put a number on it, but thousands sound better than hundreds.
Yeah. Everyone that was in the room
goes quiet.
Right.
Which leans towards what I mentioned earlier. The ferocity that she is leading this group with.
Well, to strike that much fear into that many people means that she is a powerful influence, and she's probably done some stuff that people haven't forgotten about.
That many drunk people on top of that.
Lots of drunk people, because they're celebrating. And everything that is going on stops. Everyone's silent. No one's drinking anymore. Like, it is dead silent as she's walking through. Everyone turned towards her, and as Maya tells us, most people's eyes were averted, not really looking directly at her, because it looked like, and this is said a little bit later on, but from what Maya said, it looked like that Ilsa could just suck the living soul out of somebody.
Definitely.
Striking fear into the hearts of men.
And women.
Yeah, and that too.
And rabbits.
And rabbits? Wait, rabbits?
The presence that Ilsa has about her, it's not a good thing. It's one thing to respect someone. It's
another thing to fear them.
Yeah, what those people is not respect for Ilsa. It's please don't cut anything off me. I want to live to see tomorrow respect, which is not true respect. But anyway, she's walking through the crowd and she comes to a stop. Was it 15 meters?
15 feet.
15 feet?
Yeah. So she's walking around and before she says anything, she's within 15 feet of Maya and Ari. And at that point, Ari's taking the precaution of stepping in front of Maya, kind of almost to protect her in a way. Not sure what's...
Or hide her.
Or hide her, too. I guess that would make more sense. But regardless, that doesn't even help later on from what we figure out.
Mm-hmm.
There was probably a reason why she stopped that close, just to make sure that she had an eye on what's going on, especially for what's going to happen a little bit later. But after after she starts talking, one other thing before we get to what Ilsa started saying, the Maya kind of points out a few quirks to about just Ilsa as she looks. So obviously, what the text did to her, she was very tall and like definitely some stuff looks very inhuman, but she said that there was something that was kind of left unhinged after the scientist, I guess, did her stuff. Some kind of glint in her eye that really was off-putting.
Yeah, she had the crazy eyes.
Yeah, she had those insane eyes of a crazy person.
You know, it's the look that you get when you come across somebody that you're not sure that's entirely stable.
Yeah.
It's a very distinct look.
So diving into some of the things that she says in here, she first addresses that there's a reason to be celebrating. That's why they've broken out all the alcohol and everyone is having a good time. They've had lots of changes happen in a very little amount of time. Whenever she came to Meridian or to Conrad, there were a lot of people there that weren't disciplined, no uniformity whatsoever. Everyone was just a bunch of misfits. And that was a problem of her prior leadership. So whenever I don't think at this point it is still Drake that she's under, but no, someone else who was basically leading this group of NCA militia rebels, kind of let stuff go, in her opinion. The colonel let everyone kind of devolve into their own individual interests, which caused people to be scattered, slow, and essentially was a death sentence whenever they would decide to go and attack Oni for any particular reason, or the UNSC. With the way that she says this next part, I wonder exactly what she means, but she says she relieved the colonel because the bands of misfits don't win war. So just the way that she said relieved him,
I'm pretty sure we're both thinking the same thing.
Yeah. I wonder.
And it's not a good relieve.
Yeah. I wonder how he or she got relieved of duty. And judging by some of the stuff that we'll see, I think it's probably the worst.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. But after that, she says that a band of misfits don't win wars. Big machines do, with lots of little parts moving together that have the same purpose. If one piece doesn't fit, you have to get creative and either cut part of it off, trim the fat, or smash it into place and make sure it doesn't pop out. And after that whole spiel, there's a bunch of cheers for her. She goes on to say that each and every one of them that are still there, hence the emphasis on still there, similarly to the relieved of duty part, everyone that's still there has found their place in this big machine. And it's almost time to put the big machine into motion. So everything that they've worked on, getting everyone unified, getting everyone to play a particular role in this bigger objective that they have to kind of fight against the UNSC, she thinks they're finally at a good position to where they are effective enough to fight back. She goes on to say that the big crater that now is occupying Meridian, just outside of Conrad, is their entry point into the war. And as she kind of appropriately explains, the whole has the UNSC on their heels, kind of in a position where it's definitely uneasy, which is one of the reasons why Maya is there in the first place, is because it's the only location that they have so far that's not under UNSC control. It's under NCA control. And as Ilsa aptly puts it, because they don't have it in control, it's one of their weak spots. So this is definitely a big hype session going on right now, trying to get everyone rallied together to get ready to go fight the UNSC. So the time is definitely coming. The whole random events that's happening in the Outer Colonies, she's taking that opportunity to expose a weakness in the UNSC while they're trying to cover up what's going on and trying to keep hold of the situation, which obviously hasn't worked because Mashaq heard about it, and there's definitely rumblings within the Outer Colonies that this stuff is happening. And then you had Ben's whole report of saying that there's these weird things going on out there as well. People know, and it has the UNSC worried.
Leading up to this point, they have described how Ilsa has been shaping this unit, starting with their leader.
Yeah, so she has this whole rant of figuring out what pieces fit together in what place, and how to make all those pieces run together for this bigger machine. So this has been kind of her whole thing. It's like cutting off anyone, and literally cutting off anyone who doesn't fit overall into the big picture or can't help with the big picture. And then those who don't quite fit, basically jamming them in a role and make sure that they're doing the role that they're supposed to do. She is crazy. Let's just remember that.
I really don't want to meet her.
Well, hopefully you won't have to.
It's a good thing she doesn't really exist, because right. I might have to be hiding in a hole or something. And I don't think that would help. But they do a really good job of telling anybody that doesn't know who Ilsa Zane is, who Ilsa Zane is.
Yeah, and I thought that was pretty interesting, kind of after listening to this podcast a couple of times, is you could almost listen to Hunt the Truth and the required reading that you would need for quite a bit of this stuff, like the Fall of Reach stuff that we got a lot of exposure in season one, and then the stuff with Ilsa Zane, which is an initiation, which was, I think, one of those other comic thing, like, and that big overview graph of things that you should read going into Halo.
I don't think Initiation 5 was on there.
On that, I think, graph. It was just the comic books in general, like Initiation and Escalation together. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't remember the graph. I remember the books that they recommended for the on the graph, and of course Hunt the Truth leading up to this next season or into Halo 5. But what I was impressed with was you don't have to have read Initiation to understand what role Ilsa Zane plays.
True.
They did a very good job of bringing anybody that has not read the Initiation comic up to speed as to who Ilsa Zane is. And they did it very quickly. And I think they did a really good job. Yes, the comic does go into a lot more detail, but with her character, it's detail that, yeah, it's nice to have, but it's not required.
Yeah.
Because basically you need to know that she's a failed Spartan project and that she's nuts.
And that's about it.
Those are her motivations.
Yep. Let's see. So the next point that we get to is the big announcement, the reason why they're celebrating, why everyone is drinking and whatnot. She asks everybody, has anyone ever lost any friends to Spartans? Family members, loved ones, anyone? Well, now it's time we can chalk one up on the other side of the board. And when at that comment, Maya asks BB, what is she talking about? BB goes to Waypoint and starts checking up on the feeds. Ilsa keeps on going on to say that there's a big victory for us, and that one of the big ones, the big Spartans, has died. And you have this back and forth. You hear BB say, "Oh my," and then he says, "The Master Chief." Then Ilsa says, "The Master Chief," and then BB says, "He's dead," and then Ilsa says, "He's dead." This goes right along with the TV teaser that we got this past weekend, saying that the Master Chief is dead.
It's a lie. It's all lies.
Only lies and conspiracy. But yes, so the big announcement, which Ilsa has confirmed with multiple sources, is that the Master Chief is dead. And given that it's the TV spot is on Meridian, which is the planet they're on right now, if Master Chief is indeed dead on that planet, and the fact that Ilsa Zane has confirmed reports that Master Chief is dead, wonder what that means. That opens up a lot of speculation to, is Chief actually dead? Because there is the whole behind the teaser part, Oni doing some kind of propaganda machine where they're trying to say Chief is dead. And I've seen a few people online say it's because he's defected, he's gone AWOL, so they're trying to cover it up and quickly just kind of silence that as much as possible. But then you have Ilsa Zane, who's a rebel leader, who went through the whole Spartan program, so she knows how a lot of that works. And to say that she has had numerous sources confirm that Chief is dead, it kind of brings up the question of, is Chief actually dead?
What keeps running through my head is the lengths that Oni went to frame Ben. I cannot put this past them to be a setup.
Yeah, it's hard to think that unless there's a very convincing death, and this would be another game that Oni is playing to where they're trying to make it look like Chief is really dead, and maybe they just did a good enough job to convince a lot of people that he was in fact dead, to where it could get reported up the chain that Ilsa would hear something like that, then, I mean, that wouldn't necessarily be too far-fetched to think about, but it definitely does get you thinking, with someone as influential and loosely using the term powerful as Ilsa Zane, that if she hears from multiple sources and sources that she trusts, if she hears that the Chief is dead, there's a good reason to suspect that Chief might be dead. And really, we're not going to know until the end of Halo 5, even if we know by the end of Halo 5 whether or not Chief is dead. But it definitely seems more like an Oni play at this point. And if they were able to convince someone like Ilsa Zane that the Chief is dead, then it kind of goes to show that Oni is still kind of in control of the situation. Now, granted, right now at this point, Maya doesn't know for sure if the Chief is dead. Neither does Ari. Because I'm guessing the feeds that BB's looking at isn't necessarily the official Oni feeds. This is probably just the public news feeds that he's able to get in the region. So I'm pretty sure this isn't Oni official at this point. It's not something that they could easily go out and get. But given that the kind of interesting situation that we're in, it's definitely in the possibility that Chief could either be dead or Oni's playing a really good game for that specific point, and they're playing Ilsa, trying to expose a weakness in her.
All I gotta say, if Chief really is dead, a building dropping on him better not be the reason he's dead.
Let's hope not. But just to kind of point out of what Oni did to Ben, kind of used Ben to pull certain groups out, expose certain things about the Rebel Alliance that wouldn't have been easily able to be picked out if it wasn't for Ben pursuing some of the leads he was pursuing. Now, granted, that got him into some trouble and now he's in solitary confinement, but it did play in Oni's favor to where they learned quite a bit about the Rebel front that they wouldn't have otherwise learned. I mean, heck, even the stuff that they got, or that Ben got from Mashaak about these weird things that are happening out there, Oni wouldn't have figured that out until they got Ari's report, and Ari's report came out a few weeks after Mashaak's report. So, in a sense, Oni used that to their advantage, and it could be very well the case here that faking the Chief's death introduces a weakness in the Rebel front, especially with, like, if Oni knew that Ilsa Zane was alive, if it was something where they did receive Ari's transmission, maybe it was something where within however long the time frame was between whenever Ari's made the report back and this time where they're on Meridian with Ilsa Zane, that, okay, we can fish her out. We can get her out of her hidey hole if we announce that the Master Chief is dead and make that public announcement.
The whole Master Chief is dead thing, it just seems like bait to me.
Which it very well could be. And if it is bait for Ilsa Zane in this regard, that's some pretty clever Oni thinking. If they're trying to get it to where they're making her overextend her reach, getting her into a place where she is comfortable with attacking when they're on the defense. I mean, and it's kind of hard to say because Oni is trying, or UNSC/Oni is trying to cover up all the events that are happening in the Outer Colonies, but if Oni has a chance to take advantage and try to get at the heart of some of the Rebel alliances out there, it makes sense that they would take their opportunities to pull that out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that they had an airstrike ready to go on Ilsa Zane's position that quickly, I mean, it could beg the question of, were they ready? Or were they hoping something like this would happen?
Or was it a plan to kill two birds with one stone?
Who's the second bird?
Maya.
You think they would have told her if they were doing the air raid to take out her as well?
They didn't. BB did.
BB would have been one of those that if he was ordered to not say anything to her, that he wouldn't.
Who says he was ordered not to say anything? Maybe he was ordered to say something at the opportune moment.
I don't think we're at that point yet. It doesn't seem like, I don't know, that just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't seem like they're at a juncture where they're trying to single her out yet.
It's possible. It's just interesting that she's not there 5 minutes and already they've got an airstrike on the way.
To me, that really speaks to Oni was hoping that, I mean, if it is the case that this was trying to pull fish out of the water, or try to get them to the surface, that it was something that they were planning on the possibility of happening, and when it did, they were ready for it. But I don't see this as something
where... Well, I mean, at the point that they BB informs Maya that there's an airstrike coming, they only have one person's report that she's there. Elsa is there or has been there. They don't know that she is there at this moment.
Right.
But the airstrike is already on its way. The timing of the airstrike is odd.
But
usually
the airstrike wasn't, I mean, the airstrike wasn't on the way.
Yeah, it was.
When she got there. No, because she reported back to Noah.
Before she had eyes on Elsa, the airstrike was on the way.
Well, yeah, based on the information that Noah told her that Elsa was there. The report back to Noah, but the sit rep that she gave back.
That got interrupted by the rebels coming up on them.
BB's transmitting stuff even without them knowing.
But even BB says, hold up on that.
Well, he could be sending information back. I don't see that totally out of the question.
The funny part is if all the networks are down on this planet, how is BB or anybody receiving anything?
Because BB is tech that got brought in. So he has a relay back to the freighter. The freighter has comms to go out. The freighter has working comms.
Yes, the freighter has working comms, but
BB has working comms. So he could talk to the freighter and the freighter could talk back to Oni. That's not a problem. They have communication now. It's just that's the only communication that they have. How else was he able to check the feeds on the Master Chief being dead?
Yeah, then why wasn't he checking the Oni feeds if he's got a link to Oni?
Because it's probably quicker in the area just to go through all the feeds just off of Waypoint. And we're talking if Oni's, about... Well, and they don't know for sure because they don't have the official word from Oni.
See, that's the kind of stuff that BB would know before. He would have known that a lot faster than what it being a surprise.
I don't know.
He's basically Admiral Osmond's personal AI. There is nothing he does not have access to.
True.
So the moment Master Chief was reported dead to Oni, he would know about it.
Well, that's the thing. He might not be to Oni considered dead. I don't know. I think we're just reading too much into it at this point.
There's 900 million things that could happen. But anyway, let's see, where were we? Oh, she was addressing her followers about the death of Master Chief.
Right. Obviously trying to figure out whether or not he's dead. Obviously, it's something that, at least for now, they can't quite confirm. They just need to worry about getting out of there. But once they had the announcement that the Master Chief was dead, the mood in the room completely changed. Some people were cheering. A few people were, but not that many. In the back of Maya's head, since Chief was basically the savior of humanity when it came to the Covenant and the Halo Rings and almost ending the war for good, she made the good question of what is so powerful that could kill the Master Chief. And then we go back to Ilsa talking and saying, this is the reason why we're celebrating, that this iconic Spartan is dead. And as she's still kind of hyping everyone up, Ari says, okay, we need to move out, and starts kind of going over to a side entrance. Ilsa Zane keeps on talking and says that it's this opportunity now that we need to continue to expand the ranks. And she's excited to see new faces. And at that point, Ari's like, okay, she knows you're here. So they stop. Ilsa Zane walks over to her and basically questions, I don't know who you are at all. But she introduces herself as Pharaoh. And Ilsa's like, I've heard of that name. You've made a lot of noise recently. At which point, Maya says, yeah, maybe a little too much. And Ilsa calls her out on trying to affect positive change, trying to make a transition out of military conflict into economic power, essentially. And Ilsa's like, why are you encouraging this? Maya says she believes that it's a reasonable alternative. And then Ilsa uses the example of how many people are following her, that the military objective is the right one to go with. There's a reason why all these people are following her and why they're saying from fire to blood. And Ilsa calls Maya naive and the things that she's doing is making them look weak when the UNSC like takes a look at them.
Mm-hmm.
So she's pulls out this whole thing of going back to making the pieces fit. And she's like, okay, so if you can't really help us in actually affecting our cause and being a positive influence towards our militia standpoint, what could you offer? We have no need for speeches. We have no need for political banter. What could you possibly give us? At this point, Ari steps in and says that Maya has extensive logistical background, so maybe that could be used to some benefit. And then there's a long pregnant pause where Ilsa is looking Maya dead in the face. And after a few moments, she says, yeah, we could totally do that. We could help her, or she could help us out with ensuring our supply lines are secure. And she's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Trying to figure out where we can mold pieces to fit and where to take out the trash. And at that point, she pulls up her gun and without even looking, kills Ari. Just straight out. Done. Dead. Ugh. Cold blood. And at the beginning, you thought that it was going to, or you could kind of think that it was going to be Maya who was dead. And you heard Ari over off saying, no. And then you kind of hear a little gasp and then you hear him get shot in the head.
And she's doing all this with a happy tone in her voice.
Yeah. As Maya tells us, she didn't even turn to look. All she did was raise her arm and bam. Of course, that got everyone's attention. And she goes on to explain how Ari was an Oni mole. Go figure. So everyone is definitely hyped after that.
Yeah. Kind of makes me think that the chip that he got, he risked more than he thought more than he intended to by getting that chip.
I think he was already a dead man.
Possibly. It is true.
I think she came into that room fully knowing that she was going to kill him.
Oh, I have no doubt. But like I said, well, Ari entered the room before her. It could be something that this chip that he stole alerted her at that moment.
Wouldn't he have been trying to get out then? And at the point where he met up with Maya, he really didn't have the plan to get out. I mean, he was ready to kind of like discuss what was on the chip. And then she was like, no, we need to get out.
Well, he was really nervous about the chip. Let's put it that way.
That's true.
We really didn't get to hear what he was going to say because Maya was already on him saying, we need to go
right
now.
Right.
Just kind of the tone they set when they actually talked about him coming back and how nervous he was in handing her this chip that could play into what happened. I mean, Ilsa could have, I just don't see Ilsa keeping a spy around once she knows.
I think it was one of those things where she definitely had her suspicions of Ari's meddling, so to speak.
Yeah,
maybe him asking too many questions or trying to figure out too many things that he doesn't need to know about. And you could be onto something more. It's just him getting that data chip. Someone finally said, okay, yeah, this guy is really suspicious. And she knew beforehand and she was just waiting for enough evidence to justify killing him outright.
See, she's not a person that needs to justify killing anybody.
Well, she just does it. But there is a time and place. I mean, she is crazy, remember?
Every time, every place is a place to die.
Well, I mean, to tie the whole celebration in with taking out an Oni spy, kind of, I think, proving the point of Oni is a big issue that you need to, that or that she probably wanted to do it at a specific time. And this was just like, okay, perfect time to get rid of this as we're getting ready to kind of activate here. And I mean, to keep someone like that in there, it also kind of keeps track of how much Oni would know of the situation. So there is kind of a tactical reason of keeping him around, even though that, yeah, she may have her suspicions that he's a spy, but even then you can kind of use that to figure out what Oni exactly knows, and in which case you can react to that.
Yeah, I just,
I'm sure she has her reasons.
She doesn't strike me as the misinformation type.
I'm not necessarily saying misinformation. I'm saying more along the lines of she had a reason that if she knew to keep him around for that long, despite the whole cutting pieces out, because you can still have a piece that's metaphorically speaking doesn't fit quite right, but is serving a useful purpose until that purpose is no more. And to her, he might have been serving a useful purpose in that. Yeah, Penn's halo kind of nails it around the head. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah. I don't know. She just doesn't seem to be that kind of person. Don't
she's
get me wrong.
She's not dumb. She's crazy, but she's not dumb.
That's what I was getting ready to say. I mean, she's a military strategist. I get it. But it just, I don't know. She just seems like somebody that would not put up with having a spy floating around. Either way, he's dead.
Well, now he is.
Yeah, now he is. The next part where she's confronting Maya, and Maya's trying to, you know, she's telling Elsa who she really is. Well, who she's really supposed to not be. But anyway, Elsa's like, well, the Oni spy just vouched for you. So in Elsa's brain, that makes Maya his accomplice or another Oni spy.
Right. Makes sense.
And at that point, her friend, what was her name? The 17-year-old?
Boswick.
Boswick says, well, I vouch for her too.
Well, she goes a step further than that too. She gets in front of Maya, in between Ilsa's gun and her, puts a knife up to Ilsa saying, I vouch for her and you should show her some respect because she's a real leader. To which Ilsa responds, don't ever hesitate with a knife, and then proceeds to kick her halfway across the room. After she gets kicked, BB tells Maya that the airstrike is here, that you need to get out. And Maya tells Ilsa that there's an airstrike on the way. And she's like, well, how do you know? A few moments pass, and then Ilsa has this disturbingly smug smile on her face. And as the airstrike hits, she says, you Oni b-. And the bombs hit.
Uh-huh.
At that point, a whole bunch of commotion ensues. Everyone is trying to scatter and figure out what the heck is going on with the bombing run. This gives Maya time to find Boswick and head away from the rubble. Gets a little bit of a head start on Ilsa, but she hears her calling out to Pharaoh, because she still doesn't know Maya's true identity. She just knows that Pharaoh is a cover and that she is indeed an Oni spook. And now Boswick knows too, because when she was trying to warn Ilsa of the bombing run, the only way that she would have known is that Oni told her and that she was working with Oni. So she grabbed Boswick. They're heading away. Maya asks BB, how do we get out of here? And BB says, there's a hangar nearby. There would probably be vehicles for the VIPs. Pharaoh's obviously trying to follow, Ilsa's trying to follow, but Maya and Boswick have enough of a head start to where they get to the hangar, they find the mongoose, and they take off with Ilsa following close behind, firing shots at them. BB has a nice little smug remark of, can you please hurry up and get us there quicker? Like, is this as fast as this thing goes?
Faster, faster, faster.
Once they get to the freighter, they get in with the mongoose. They just drive up the back ramp and they take off with Ilsa and her crew still firing upon the freighter as they're taking off. It's just bullets at this point. There's
door,
no
BB.
Yeah. Maya had to yell at BB to get the door open and then to close the door after they got there. The freighter's pretty much ready to go when they take off. It's pretty much set to go in case she needed an emergency exit. But they get off the ground. They break atmosphere, and Maya sets Boswick down on a bunk, takes care of her wounds with some of the random medical supplies that she could kind of conjure up in the freighter, because everything was slim pickings, just bare essentials for the mission. Of course, Boswick is trying to figure out who Pharaoh really is now, and Maya just tells her to save her strength because she's going to need it. At that point, she has a chance to breathe, and then she remembers that data chip that Ari gave her, and that everything that was going on was probably on the data chip. So she loaded it up, saw a bunch of different data points on there. A massive, massive info about the seismic events, different readings, charts, data points, and other predictions of things based on what they've observed. And from what Maya could deduce, they were looking for something specific. They had a whole bunch of data. Anything that was anomalous, that wasn't normal, they were looking for. And it seemed like there was some kind of signature that they were trying to figure out how to pinpoint the next event that would happen. Bibi tells Maya that they need to get to a Oni medical facility in order to take care of her friend, but Maya says that there's another place that they need to go, that she knew of someone who would be able to answer the questions of what all these readings mean. And then that's the end of the episode. You know, when I first heard that, I thought Mashok, but assuming Mashok's dead, I couldn't really figure out who else it might be other than Halsey.
I'm still thinking Mashok.
I mean, we've never heard the official word that he's dead, but based on what we heard in episode one, we'll spare you the gory details.
Well, that's all she implied, is that you don't want to know the gory details.
Yeah.
But are there really gory details? Or was that
there
just a show?
There are some pretty disturbing deaths, yeah.
No. I mean, I'm just talking about this specific one. Is she saying you don't want to know the gory details because it really is gory details, or because she doesn't want to want them to know that she didn't kill him?
I suppose that's a possibility.
Because we've already heard in the first episode, she's already having her doubts as she narrates what she's recording.
That's a good point. And there was the whole discussion about her not having a confirmed kill on Mashok because she never fired her weapon.
Exactly. Why bring that up?
That's a good point. I did not think about that. Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess that's technically possible.
As far as it being Halsey, I don't think so at all. Because as the story's laying out right now, Halsey's still with the Covenant. Well, Jewel Amdama's Covenant. Probably not the best place for an Oni spook to go.
Well, we don't exactly know at this point whether she is in Jewel's custody or not, right? Because we don't know exactly when this is taking place.
Yes, actually.
Do we?
Well, the timeline, we're leading, from what I can gather from the way they're describing these events, is especially leaving a kilometer wide crater, is the events that are happening are Guardians launching.
That'd be my guess, yes.
Okay, that puts the timeline pretty close to the events of Halo 5.
Close, yes, but
where this is going to overlap with the start of the game, start of Halo 5. And thanks to the little opening cutscene, we know that they don't have Halsey until after Halo 5 starts.
Oh, no. I still think that there's a little bit of gray area that it could be possible.
Maybe later in the series, yes. Right now, I don't think so.
Fair enough. So many possibilities.
Yes, it's not like they give us an overwhelming amount of dates here.
No, definitely not in this. That is a good point, though. Did not think about that.
I think we'll find out next week.
We very well might. Oh, no, I miss Mashok, so it would be cool to have him back.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys. Did you miss me?
If they do bring him back, I can't even imagine what the line's going to be.
Depending on how they bring him back, I don't know if he'll be that joyful.
I think he'll be pretty happy that he's not dead.
Yeah, but do we know what particular state he's living in right now?
Well, I'm sure he's not at the Hilton Garden Inn or anything. But I'm sure it's not too awfully bad.
Yeah. I don't know. We shall see. But that'll wrap it up for the episode. That's the end of episode 2, For Under the Truth. So another 3 or more to go. Four to launch.
Doesn't it go the week after?
I don't know. I don't think that's been officially said yet of how long it's actually going to take place. But assuming that leads up to the launch of Halo 5, which I believe it will, We have at least four other episodes coming down the pipeline.
Well, right now on the webpage, the little boxes, the fourth one's blinking.
So
I'm still not sure what exactly that means, because it's gone around to different boxes.
Yeah, but Noah said that we were on the right track. He didn't confirm that we were correct when we made comment about it last episode.
Yeah, I'm not sure what exactly that means.
It has bearing on something that has to do with information that comes out on the website. Just not exactly sure what it is yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wait a minute. Let's see. How many posts?
Penn said, Gianna said four more in the tweet. So I guess the last one will be on the launch of Halo 5. Could you link that tweet, Penn? Just so we have it in the chat.
If you can find it.
Well, there wouldn't be too many Halo tweets under her account probably, so it wouldn't be that hard to find. Hopefully not. But that is going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thank you guys for tuning in. Sorry we were Toa Freak less tonight. Hopefully he will be back on next week for episode number 3 to talk about Hunt the Truth. It has been an honor to have gone through these with you guys, and hopefully you guys will keep on joining us for future episodes. So keep on tuning in to our live streams. We're going to keep on doing these on Tuesday up until the launch of Halo. So make sure you keep on tuning back in. Make sure you can remember you can check out our website, podtackler.com. And while you're there, you can head on over to our forums. We actually have a spoiler thread for Hunt the Truth. So if you have listened to the episodes and you're keeping up with them, then you can head on over to that forum, and we're talking about some of the interesting stuff that we are hearing over there. So you can do that. You can also check out our YouTube channel, where we've been uploading a bunch of Halo 5 Guardians content. A bunch of embargoes have released. We've had gameplay on campaign, on arena, on Warzone, and there's a couple more videos that we're putting out regarding some of the customization options and the rec packs. So those will be coming out over the next couple of days as well.
And the Easter egg one.
And their Easter egg one. I found a pretty cool Easter egg last night of a grunt flying through the main menu screen. So definitely go check that out. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and obviously Twitch for those who are listening to us live right now. And you can also check out Twitch for a few other shows that we do. Our regular shows are on Thursdays. We have our Fragment Fridays with Godzilla T, and then Man Up Mondays with Mr. Hassast. And we're going to be having an expansion of our stream schedule whenever Halo 5 drops, and we got some pretty cool stuff coming for that, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Also make sure you check out the podcast network. We are part of a conglomerate of gaming specific podcasts, so there are other podcasts on the network like Guardian Radio, Critscast, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. So check out those podcasts if you're interested in finding some other gaming specific podcasts to fill your ears with. There's some really great quality content out there in those podcasts. So even if you don't play the games, they're nice to just listen to. They're done very well, and they have personalities that fit very well for a podcast. So definitely go check them out. Let them know that we sent you. Also, even though he's not here, please go and check out Toa Freak's content. He is over on Halo Canon at YouTube, and he does lore videos out the wazoo. So he does write-ups on the Canon fodder stuff. He's done some profiles on all the characters that we're going to be playing in Halo 5 Guardians. And he also does his overview, his little dissections of all the Hunt the Truth episodes on his channel as well. So please make sure you go check him out over there, and also check out the Halo archive as well. That'll wrap it up for our podcast tonight. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and keep on shining.